Board Member Mitchell?
Here.
Board Member Spear?
Here.
Board Member Fraser? It was Duke and Chair Ledger.
Here. First item of business is the approval of the minutes of November the 8th, 2018.
I'll move to approve the minutes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. We don't need public comment on that, do we? All right. Okay. Next item on our agenda is the financial statements and independent auditor's report for fiscal years ended June 30th, 2017 and 2016. The staff recommendation is to accept a report from the Maher Accountancy. Mr. Maher is here tonight. If anyone would like to question him about the financial statement. There being no questions.
You do need a motion to accept.
Okay, so we need an motion.
I'll move to accept.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Third item on our agenda is an information community outreach subcommittee report and presentation on community efforts. The outreach committee's here.
No, we don't have anything to report other than I believe we're trying to find a date for our coffees in the new year with the Anchor Out community, and I don't know that we've landed yet on a date, but keep posted. We should have one coming soon, and we'll get the word out as soon as we've figured out our calendars. Hopefully this month. Yeah.
Thank you very much. All right, rolling along to item four on our agenda, the mooring feasibility and planning study. Is there a staff report?
Yes, there is. This item comes to you this evening after many months leading up to the issue of a request for proposals for a marine ecology-based mooring feasibility and planning study. This comes directly from the board's direction last April to pursue moorings as an approach to improve the health, safety, and management of Richardson Bay. We developed the request for proposals based on input from board members and members of the community. That proposal was issued in October. We received three proposals from three different firms. Those proposals were reviewed by planning staff from the member agencies. We ended up interviewing all three of the firms that submitted proposals with an interview panel that was comprised of Chair Winter, Bill Price, the Harbor Administrator, Leslie Alden, Aide to Supervisor Sears, myself, and Pete Hudson, who is a marine ecologist with Sutro Science, who very generously and graciously donated his time and expertise to advise during the interview process. After the three interviews were conducted, it was the panel's conclusion that Merkel and Associates was the superior selection for the board to consider in pursuing the mooring feasibility and planning study. Merkel has done extensive work in not only the San Francisco Bay in general, but Richardson Bay specifically since the mid-1990s. He's conducted many eelgrass surveys and studies. He's done some restoration. He's also has experience in working with moorings, more recently with Tomales Bay and their mooring program that they established there. He's helped them advise them on their moorings, as well as the relationship with eelgrass, the type of moorings, et cetera. We found him to be very professional, knowledgeable, and credible in terms of providing the assistance that the board will need in weighing the options around issues such as location, capacity, the type of mooring equipment and technique, as well as transiting from the vessels to the shore. The proposal itself, the scope of work, is included in your staff report packet. And I've outlined in the cover report the items that the scope of work includes, which generally speaking covers information gathering and reviewing the data. I wanted to point out that what Merkel does intend to do is reach out to the stakeholders, other agencies, the Anchorage Association or other mariners, Audubon, et cetera, to find out what kind of data and information is available that they have available that they can offer and provide information that they should consider in evaluating the various elements they're asked to do. They will take all this data and information, analyze it, take a look at whether there's any gaps in the data information that they need to let us know about that might affect the completeness and the thoroughness of their advice. But they are confident they can perform the study even without getting some additional data. Then they will ultimately present the findings to the stakeholders and the board of directors. I did want to point out that they are very confident they can do the study without doing some other initial or additional data collection, they have identified a couple of optional services that they could perform that might augment the board's understanding of the physical conditions of the bay. The most relevant one would be a 2019 bathymetric survey, as well as, while they're at it, doing an eelgrass survey in 2019. It's been over 15 years since there's been a bathymetric study done in the bay. There have been more recent eelgrass surveys, but not so much the bathymetric survey. So if there was another optional level to perform, that was the one that they would recommend. They also could do a wind and wave analysis currently, but that is a little lower of a priority. So how does this work in terms of how can the board move forward with this proposal, given the cost of the study that we are looking at? It's basically about a $100,000 study. It's $99,695 specifically for the base contract, with the other optional services being $40,000 for the bathymetric and eelgrass surveys and $12,200 for a wave and wind and climate modeling. I did approach the County of Marin to see if they would be willing to find funds that could be used for this study, and I have gotten some initial staff support for that request for at least the base study, but the additional optional studies, I'm afraid, is not incorporated into the request that they can pursue. So that would be something where the board would need to advise on whether you want us to look for outside funding from other agencies or organizations to see if some funds could be acquired to perform those surveys, particularly the bathymetric and eelgrass survey. And that would have to be decided in the next few months, because this is the time to get that underway while they're doing it now. So the recommendation is that the board authorize the proceeding with the base contract upon authorization of funding, such as from the County of Marin, and any other optional services as they may be funded from other agencies or organizations or other board direction. I'd be happy to answer any question. I also just want to do a shout out for Pete Hudson, who's in the audience. I want to thank him again for his help during this project.
Any questions to staff?
Yeah, so Beth, you described that very well, but I just want to make sure that I fully understand sort of the different aspects of parts of this potential study. So for the baseline study, that would be based entirely on existing data and then additional interviews.
It would be based on existing data, and then they would contact the other organizations and stakeholders to see what information that they had, yes.
Okay, and I'm just noting, it says in here the last time that there was eelgrass data was back in 2014, and you said the last time any bathymetric data was collected was 15 years ago. That obviously being quite a long time ago.
Right.
It's possible, though, that other agencies might have more recent data that could go into the baseline study?
It would be ideal if...
That would be great. We don't know.
We don't know that they do.
Okay. And I will say, confirm that the request has been made to the county for the cost of the additional study of $99,695, and that request is coming to our Board of Supervisors this Tuesday. So I'm hopeful, it does take a vote by more than just me, that I'm hopeful that piece will be approved by the board, but we'll know Tuesday morning. So. And if it's not, we're in Ruby. We got real problems. We have to find more money, even more money someplace else, right? We got problems.
Any other questions?
No.
In that case, is there anyone in the public that would like to comment?
Let me wait here. I do think, when we talked before about how this was a potentially a great opportunity to get updated information, and I think that was certainly one of the reasons that I was interested in doing the study, and I thought it would have some benefit. So I don't know if you've had opportunities to explore whether there are potential sources of the additional funding for the optional pieces of the study from any other entities, or that's something that we would really need to start having those conversations if our board decided that was worth doing.
I've done a couple of informal outreaches to an organization and a city.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, but we need a lot more work to be done on that front. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Public comment?
Yeah, Chad Carvey, Sausalito. My wife and I live on our sailboat. I just wanted to make sure, and I think you said this in passing, but that the product will be moorings that have least impact on the eelgrass, and hopefully a few, you know, one, two, or three different kinds. And I know we've researched a lot of the different kinds in Florida and elsewhere where that's been done, but just that make sure that the product is not just information, but actual things that we can take action on, mooring systems that won't impact the eelgrass, or have greatly reduced the impact on the eelgrass. Thanks.
Hi, Alden Bevington. Just a question. I haven't seen the full spec list that's being investigated for this mooring feasibility study, but I'm curious if you all have on that list governance, so to speak. I know that right now we have a board that understands some of the human and social situations maybe more than a future board, and I'm wondering if there are protections that could be put in to recognize that more. We went through the process 4 years ago or 3 years ago, mooring feasibility plan that Sausalito shot down, and actually at that time I was opposed to it only on the principle that at that point we had no dialogue between the Anchorage community and the governance, the managing. So I'm hoping that as this moves forward, that there would be a seat at the table for representatives of the Anchorage community, because that's it, most simply. And this is kind of preparing for a future when we never know who's going to be on the board and how sentiments can change.
Yeah, Alden, as a point of information, there is a line item for consideration of management and enforcement needs.
Awesome.
It's general enough.
Okay, thank you.
Next.
Yes, Douglas Storms, 700 Waldo Point. My comment concerning the effort that's going on is that the Mariners of Richardson Bay are brought in early on continuously to help develop this plan. For example, we've been working on this, and there's a real concern by Audubon and many other environmentally concerned organizations concerning the impact of vessels anchored in Richardson Bay to the eelgrass. And the policy that we've adopted in the Richardson Bay Anchoring and Safety Guidelines is that the ideal situation is to be on two anchors. And if all the vessels out there were put on two anchors, that means that they would swing, the pattern, the area that they would take up, there would be a 75% reduction in the area. If they sat on the bottom, it would be a 75% reduction in the impact that the vessels at anchor have in Richardson Bay concerning the eelgrass. So once again, echoing what Chad and what Alden said, to summarize, is that any contract that you get, they're going to have to get data. We have the mariners that are out there, people that work out there, we have the most reliable, accurate, continuous data, a wealth of information from people that have been out there 30 years. So we know where the eelgrass is and where it isn't and what the impact is. So we can be a tremendous asset to the contractor, whoever you hire, so that they can, the more information they get, accurate information, the better plan they can come up with. And there's a lot of people out there that are willing to work with them. Thank you.
Anyone else like to comment?
Hi, Rebecca Schwartz-Lesberg. I'm the San Francisco Bay Program Director with Audubon, California. Happy New Year. Good to see everybody. I just want to say that we support this item. We encourage you to move forward with this mooring feasibility study. We're really encouraged by this action and are very optimistic that this is moving forward. We're excited, particularly supportive of the choice of Merkle. Merkle and Associates are the eelgrass and mooring folks. They've worked all throughout California, and they're really wonderful. I would really encourage RBRA to find a way to fund that 2019 eelgrass and bathymetric study. I think that that's kind of where that sounded like some of the conversation was going, but I think that that would be incredibly helpful. There's stuff that we can say using things like more recent drone imagery, but that is a little bit more narrow focus. So a full bathymetric and eelgrass study would be really valuable. But I would say it's not one of those things where, in my opinion, where it wouldn't be worth moving forward if we can't do that. I still think that there's a lot of good information out there. And if Merkle and Associates feels like that information is good enough, I think that they really will give an honest answer for that, whether it can be done without it. But I do support finding it. And then emphasize that if it's determined that whatever mooring system is in place would have some amount of impact on eelgrass, just to really quantify that so mitigation measures can be sort of roughed out ahead of time and we can figure out really what are we talking about in terms of cost and extent of damage when we can take that into consideration. And then finally, if Audubon can be of assistance, whether it's speaking at other entities in support of additional funding or providing our data, we are happy to do so. Thank you.
Yes, love that funding.
That really can help with money.
You want some money from me? Is that what you said? I don't know about that. Well, if you had, well, all right. First of all, I think you're on the right track. You have good consultants. We've hired both of them at various points, and one of them we have contract with right now for various things. But we have two problems, and one is that it doesn't. It's just getting existing data. It's not getting new data on wildlife and bird use. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. It may be identified as a data gap in the end, but it certainly is in the beginning. It needs, you just are not going to get, you're welcome to get our Christmas count data. The Christmas, just ask, it's not readily available, but the data covers all of the Sausalito waterfront, and then we have people that go out in a boat and they get the water, but it's not focused on the areas that are actually used by the anchor outs. I mean, it includes the sanctuary waters. And so we would need a map. You mentioned a map in here, and we'd need a map to maybe give you some guidance. But basically, the data is over a much larger area. And secondly, the fact that there's, it's set up to do a mooring field, and I this has been the approach all along, but it seems to us that you need to have some allowance for maybe there wouldn't be any good place to put or any environmentally sound place to put anchor outs. And so we'd like to make sure that that's included in. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to comment?
Hi. I've been interested in the...
What's your name, please?
Oh, my name's Robert Rourke, sorry. I've been interested in the Point Mulati proposed park or development over in Richmond on the other side of the bridge. And the statistics over there are that they are the largest eelgrass left on an unmolested coast. And what they say, the reason for that is they say, they claim just recently, the people that did the East Shore State Park are trying to go to the Point Mulati area. They say that any drainage that has more than 10% pavement is what's killing the eelgrass. That's what they say. And they're pretty big organization. They're Save the Bay and everybody else. So the eelgrass becomes a red herring here. It seems to be doing okay considering the relative pollution of this bay. And for people to talk about herring fishing, there's very little herring fishing going on. So,
would anyone else like to comment on this item? There being no other comments, we'll bring it back to our board.
So I'll kick off. I do agree with Barbara Saltzman. I think it would be terrifically helpful to have additional data, which is why, you know, we flagged the optional bathymetric and eelgrass surveys as a potential part of a study if we can find additional funding. So I think we should go forward with this. I'm hopeful that, you know, as of Tuesday, we'll have a better sense of the county's ability to fund the baseline study, and that we need to go out in an invigorated sort of way to at least find the $40,000 for the additional bathymetric and eelgrass surveys. Now, you know, we've talked in the past that it might be helpful to have more information about wind wave action, and I think that's true. My sense is that's, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that maybe that's a lower priority than the additional information about eelgrass and the bathymetry. So if we can, you know, find a source for $52,000, that's fabulous. But it seems like, you know, the focus right away needs to be to try to find funding for that additional $40,000. And that said, I'd be happy to move this item.
Yeah. I'll second that. I totally agree with you on $40,000. I think in this county, hopefully the board approves the $99,000 that we have in the month or so here and generate the $40,000 with the support from our local partners. I really, after 3 years being on this board and seeing the big change in atmosphere when I first came here, where we are now and looking forward to the future, I think actually this is a great first step. And looking at the timeline here for the summer to have this in front of us would be ideal. So I move forward on it too.
So I was part of the committee that reviewed the different consultants, and I was really impressed by Merkel, their professionalism, the broad scope of the proposal that they made. And I also think that it's very important to find the additional funds to do the bathymetric survey and also the, I think it's called side-glancing sonar, mapping of the eelgrass. It's the state of the art, and Merkel, from what I understand, almost invented it. So I'm very much in favor of this.
Cool.
So we need a motion.
I think I moved already.
Okay, second. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
That's it. Thank you.
It looks really great with only three people.
So let's see. I'm going to circle back to item three, the community outreach subcommittee. Because Alden is here now. How much time would you need? Okay.
Okay, Doug Storms. Just a couple quick statistics. As of our count, there are 190 vessels at anchor in Richardson Bay, County and Sausalito Waters. Just anecdotal, in 2016, in the summer, there were 260 vessels. So that is a 25% drop in the number, reduction in the number of vessels at anchor in Richardson Bay. The Boat Savers, which is a subcommittee of the Richardson Bay Special Anchorage Association, think of it as in terms of a volunteer fire department. We don't get paid. We volunteer. We don't require somebody pay us money. If they want to donate money for gas for our services, we'll gladly accept any and all donations. But it's a volunteer effort, and in the past 2 months, there's 21 vessels that we were able to save, i.e. keep from sinking or dragging over to our friends in Tiburon and Belvedere. 10 of those were tenders. 11 of those were vessels. Now, we've been working on the Burgee system, and a vessel that is in compliance with the Richardson Bay Special Anchorage Association and meet those four different criterias of sewage, registration, seaworthiness, ground tackle. We've been working toward getting the Mariners. It's a coalition of the willing. We don't force people. This is a volunteer effort that individual Mariners are willing. They agree to the guidelines, and they're working toward that. As of the last count, there's 50 vessels out of the 110. And I need to distinguish between the two different categories because it's important for Sausalito and for the public to know that are we talking about liveaboards or non-liveaboard vessels, storage vessels. And so as of our count, there are approximately 110 liveaboard vessels out of the 260 that are out there. Yeah, there's 190. There's 60 in Sausalito waters, 130 in the county's waters, okay? And once again, these numbers, because of the season and stuff like that, they're not exact, but they show trends. So there's 50 vessels that are almost there. There's a real push to say, well, we need to get these Burgees up. The only thing worse with getting Burgees sailing on a vessel is we don't want a vessel to have a Burgee and end up over at Tiburon or, you know, to be a problem. And so we're making sure every T is crossed, every, you know, I is dotted, every jot and tittle to make sure that when a Burgee flies, it's inspected and verified and it's not going to be a problem. Let me see. I want to give kudos to Alden Bevington. He took the lead of rescuing the Pronto. The Pronto is a vessel that was built in 1914. It's a sloop, a 50-foot sloop built in 1914, and he was able to secure it and bring it into Ross's boatyard in Sausalito, and that's in the process of being restored and to be made seaworthy. And in accordance with the Marine Debris Act, I believe there is a provision there for historical vessels. You know, that extra consideration is given to those vessels because there's only two vessels out there. The Sassoon, which was an Army Corps of Engineer dignitary boat, and the Pronto, Alden's boat that he's creating a nonprofit to restore, those are built in 1914. So we really need to, the Mariners really want to preserve the past, okay, our historical traditions, and to save those boats that really cry out for being saved. Let me see. The last thing I'll mention is that all of this is a team effort. You know, we can only do so much. Several times in the past 2 years, different agencies have said, well, tell us which boats to take, which are going to be a problem. Our job is not to be the cop and to tell you which boats to get rid of. Our responsibility is to work with those Mariners that want to work together to come into compliance, to work as a team. But this will only go forward, whether you get a mooring or field or not. This whole thing is depending upon the agencies, the Coast Guard, the Sheriff, the Police, Sausalito, RBRA, the Mariners, Autobahn, working together to come up with a good plan, an efficient plan, a cost-effective plan. So that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Is there any public comment? There being none. Oh, almost none.
Chad Carvey, Sausalito Anchor Out. And my wife and I are leaving in June for a 10-year circumnavigation voyage, so we have this is the final 6 months, so I'm hoping things, you know, like you said, the last 4 years have been an amazing turnaround.
So here's my worry. So we've had this, all these convoluted battles with RBRA, and now we're aligned in this, just this beautiful approach, thoughtful approach, intelligent approach. And then Sausalito City recently, over this past year, just an intelligent approach. It's down to, actually the number in Sausalito Waters is 42 or 43, depending on how you count. So not 60, but really down there. It looks thin. It looks like lots of space. So RBRA, Sausalito, they've really said absolutely they're committed to an end where there's going to be anchor out liveaboards. We're going to have that community. RBRA, Sausalito. What we're facing right now is BCDC. And I would ask the RBRA to take a strong stand and do whatever you can to reach out to them and to stand against some of the things they're doing, because this is the big crux of the problem right now. So they're asking you, the RBRA, to remove all of your moorings. That is going to be looked at by myself and many anchor outs. If you allow that to happen, in other words, by the end of January, you pull out those six or nine moorings, however many moorings they're asking you to pull out. That is a declaration of war, as far as I'm concerned. Because what they're doing is, these are beautiful, well-inspected. Bill has these moorings inspected every year. We know that they were not used as they were intended to from the beginning. That is something that needs to be addressed absolutely, completely, but do not remove them. Whether they get used for vessels in transit, whether they get used for vessels only in storm conditions because they need a place to go, that's great. But if you remove those, that is telling us that there's a complete loss of faith. There's not going to be any future with anchor outs, because if they're going to make RBRA remove their beautiful, well-inspected, long history moorings, then none of us are safe out there. So right now, BCDC is moving forward on that no anchorage, no anchor outs end, and they are the new people we need to fight against. So whatever you could do to appeal to them so that you don't remove your moorings, the RBRA moorings, or to stand against them, to take opposition, that I'm really, really worried about the stand that they're taking. Even Audubon tonight, everything that, except for what Barbara said, but everything that the rest of the Audubon said, is we're in a line, we're in agreement, we need to study, we want that information, we don't want to mess up the eelgrass. So really, really concerned with that stance of BCDC. And Adam Pulitzer, the city manager, said that in all his years that he's been here, this is the first time he's worried about us as anchor outs. This is the first time he's seeing a danger that we might have to all go away or face that danger. And you've already heard what's going to happen if you try to do that. So BCDC is going to be responsible for a huge mess unless they start listening to you, listen to Sausalito, and become reasonable. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you want to summarize? Thank you, Alden.
First, I wanted, regarding the mooring thing, I want to encourage the RBRA to respond to the city of Sausalito that, and the BCDC, that if you're being asked to remove your moorings, to, at the same time insist that Parker Dive removes all of its moorings, the Sausalito Yacht Club moves all of its moorings, and also maybe some of the folks with their moorings off the, West Shore Boulevard or whatever it is here in Tiburon. We shouldn't be selective in our enforcement of this issue. Secondly, just regarding the marine debris thing, Doug, with his fantastic presentation, did misspeak one thing, and that is that though there should be, I feel, a historical carve-out or exception to the marine debris, the way the marine debris law is applied, there is not. The vessel that I saved, the Pronto II, was built in 1914. I have a to whom it may concern letter from the U.S. Department of Interior by a presently furloughed historian that says, please do anything that you can to restore this piece of maritime history or help this person or this effort. That vessel was occupied. It was a wooden vessel. It needed restoration. I now have it on the ways. I'm spending a lot of money and a lot of time, and a lot of people are helping to do this. It needed restoration. It's important to understand the Marine Debris Act says that a vessel is not fit for transference across water, is not capable of being made fit. It's clear falsehood that that vessel was capable of being made fit. that vessel was occupied by an old couple. 3 days before they left and I took it over, that vessel was boarded by Lieutenant Frass, who told them point blank that he would forcibly remove them from the vessel and seize it and destroy it. That's a historical vessel. So we did a lot to save that. There's a lot of people around the world. I mean, around the world, but around the bay. When I hauled it out, all these old salts came out. It's actually pretty cool. So that's it. I really hope that as you all are addressing problematic vessels or vessels that need haul-outs, if they have historical significance, please do what you can to contact the owners or see what we can do to save them. I'm happy to connect you with the historical societies that are concerned about these things. Thank you.
Hello. Rebecca Schwartz-Lesberg, Audubon, California. I just want to provide a slightly different perspective in regards to BCDC. They, in my opinion, they really aren't the enemy here. They have very good staff who are working really hard to make sure that existing state law is fair and implemented. And so rather than seeing them as someone to fight, we might disagree with them, or somebody here might disagree with them, but rather than seeing somebody to fight, really if we can make sure that they're at the table as this mooring program or vessel management plan or whatever is that next step after the feasibility study, as that's developed, if they're involved, and if their staff support it, there are ways that they can help make sure that it's implementable, and still consistent with state law. And there's things that, there's a lot that they can do to help us implement what we as a community develop if they're at the table early. So just to offer that slightly different perspective. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Adrienne was going to be here. I think that she had car issues. Yeah, she's almost always here.
She's here.
Oh, she's here.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
There she is.
Yeah.
Hi.
We never have any conflicts in this country about any laws or anything, so I don't think
about it. Yes, Douglas Storms, 700 Waldo Point. Some historical perspective. I guess I'm to blame because when I was anchored out in 87 and in these storm events, there'd be boats floating by, and after I used two of the anchors that I had, I didn't have any more resources to secure the vessels that were floating by going to Tiburon or Belvedere or out the gate. So I went to the RBRA and said, hey, could you provide secure moorings out there so that we can use them for those events? And the RBRA said, no, we can't because we don't have money. So I worked with the Mariners of Richardson Bay, and we installed 5 moorings off from Dumphy Park and one across the channel to the north and one across the channel to the south. And I managed it for a year. I spent $753, and I think I made $853 or something like that. It's all documented, written down, all that good stuff. I went before the RBRA, gave a report, and they said, well, you can't run that. You're a private individual. So they ended up working with the BCDC to get 5 of the moorings, and so they requested from the BCDC a permit, and they were to be used for emergency use for short-term transient. Well, obviously, as Chad said, it didn't end up like that. They became storage vessels because there were vessels on there for 3 years, no owner, nothing. And so now, going back, in terms with the BCDC, I'm going to take you back again. When the RBRA was created, the Mariners sued the RBRA. BCDC filed a cross complaint on the RBRA's behalf. And so we were in a legal battle with the BCDC. And if you read case law concerning this whole situation, case law, three judges in San Francisco in the 9th District, they said that the Mariners, the mistake is that you never applied for a permit. Now, having said that, 2 of the people that were on the suit, because there were approximately 30 people that were on the suit, 2 of them were removed from the suit. Cynthia Cadua, Susie Olson. They were maritime workers. And so there are provisions within the law that the BCDC works with that there are exceptions. And so if it's a maritime community, maritime workers, BCDC, according to case law, not somebody's opinion, but according to case law, there is provisions written within the ordinances, within the guidelines of the BCDC, where provisions are made for mariners. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Barbara Salzman still. I'm going to also speak in behalf, in support of BCDC. Their charge, and I've said this before, is to uphold the public trust, and everybody should comply with that. And so we would urge you to comply with removing whatever moorings they have urged or required or asking or whatever thing.
Is there any other public comment? In that case, bring it back to the board. Yeah, it's a report. So, yeah, okay. No kidding. So I think ultimately we do have to check with county council on regarding the status of those mooring balls.
Right, and this is an agenda, so we
really
should talk about
that. Yeah.
Maybe next meeting.
Next time. Okay. Okay. Next item. Item 5 is a letter to the countywide coordinated entry program seeking higher housing assistance priority for persons living on the water in Richardson Bay. Is there a staff report?
Yes, there's a coordinator entry system for persons in the county who are seeking assistance with gaining housing. This coordinated entry program is comprised of individuals from community organizations, faith communities, governmental agencies, nonprofits, and so forth. And they, this coordinated entry program uses a standardized assessment tool to evaluate the vulnerability of individuals who come to them seeking housing assistance. And this is a standardized tool that's used all over the country. However, it's come to our attention by way of the folks from the city of Sausalito engaging on this subject that the assessment tool does not necessarily give consideration for the vulnerability of persons who are living on the water, particularly persons who are actively seeking alternatives to for housing assistance. And the concern that exists is that people who are living on the water who are looking for an alternative to that condition because either their vessel is not in appropriate condition for that they can handle, they don't have the experience, or otherwise they're just ready to not live on the water anymore, that they are in a particularly vulnerable situation when it comes to the winter storms and high winds, that condition should have special consideration in looking at housing assistance for them. The what is in your packet this evening is a letter written by the City of Sausalito to the board members urging that the board chair send a letter of support to the coordinator entry program to bump up the assessment number for folks who are on the water seeking housing assistance to recognize their vulnerability and to give a special consideration for that particular circumstance. We also, your staff sees this as an opportunity for the board also to make a pitch for not only just providing an extra point of consideration, but also recognizing the outreach and other service efforts that are needed to the population on the water that is not as easily accessed as other persons that may be seeking housing alternatives. So our recommendation from the staff is that you authorize the board chair to work with staff on developing such a letter requesting higher consideration for housing assistance. I believe there's someone or individuals from the coordinated entry program here this evening that may want to further amplify on the process that you use and what this means for this request to be made.
Thank you. The folks that are here from the coordinated entry program, would you like to give us a presentation, please?
Uh, So we haven't actually prepared sort of an official presentation. We're mostly hoping, you know, if you have any questions that we can. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, I'm Carrie Sager. I'm the Homelessness Program Coordinator with County Health and Human Services. And I'm joined by representatives from Homeward Bound because, as you say, coordinated entry is a it's a collaborative. It's not a county program. It really is the county and then several the cities and our nonprofit partners who provide housing supports. So I don't. I think the sort of the general. Coordinated entry, the goal of coordinated entry is to prioritize people based on vulnerability. And we're certainly, if there are people who we're missing through our current process, we want to make sure that we capture those people. But there are many ways of determining vulnerability, and it's very difficult to make a determination where you say this type of vulnerability is, this person is more vulnerable than that one. So it's a balancing act. Is somebody who is on a boat, and the boat's not a boat of limited seaworthiness. Obviously that is a type of vulnerability, but say, comparing that person to somebody who is, has a health condition and is sleeping on the streets without any shelter, to make those comparisons is very difficult. So the reason we've chosen the VI SPDAT as our assessment tool is that it's evidence-based, it's widely used, it's really one of the only heavily tested tools that's out there to measure vulnerability. And so while we're certainly not saying like we can never look at any other type of vulnerability, and that's actually something that we're looking at right now, we want to make sure that any changes we make to our prioritization system are based on evidence, and based in, data. So we're looking at things like homeless deaths, and causes of death. I don't know, Paul, if you wanted to add anything.
Before you go on from it, can I ask mm-hmm. a follow-up question? Mm-hmm. Is the assessment tool that you're using a tool that was created by some third-party entity, or was this tool, how was the tool developed?
Yeah, it's a third-party tool. It's created by an organization called OrgCode, and that's one of the reasons some of the other communities in the Bay Area have developed their own tools. The difficulty with developing your own tool is that the testing process to determine, is this actually collecting the evidence you want it to collect, is very difficult. And this was an assessment that had been rigorously tested, which is why we adopted it.
And it's my understanding that this process in our application would be used by mariners that are on the water in an affirmative way rather than having our agency or another agency removing people. This is for people who feel that they can no longer live on the water for whatever reason and are looking for public housing, and they're in dire straits because of weather, water, the condition of their vessels, or whatever, and they would be given some sort of a priority through your system. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, yes, the system as it currently exists is sufficiently flexible to accommodate people who are living on the water and at risk. Is that correct?
Sort of.
Not being willing to add that criteria in the tool that you're using.
Yeah, so the issue is that we can't just sort of say, yes, we recognize that this is a vulnerability, so we're adding a point, for a couple of reasons. One is that this is a copyrighted tool, and so we can't change the tool. We can layer other considerations on top of it. The issue with just sort of saying, yes, we'll just flex the tool and add, give sort of extra consideration for people who are on the water, is just making, we would need to look into, are there things that are not being captured by the current tool?
Is the current tool premised on the assumption that living on the street creates a vulnerability?
Sure, go ahead.
Sure. So I'm Paul Fordham with Homeward Bound of Marin, and we are one of the nonprofit of, I think there's seven nonprofits currently in the coordinated entry process. And just to jump in and answer that question, I would say that the current tool, the VI Spadat, which is used in multiple communities across multiple states to measure vulnerability, the key is measuring the vulnerability of the person. So you're not giving your affordable housing resource or your homeless resource to somebody who doesn't really need it. You're prioritizing the resources for the most vulnerable. So it measures things like physical health, mental health, vulnerability of being attacked, like people being attacked on the street, their mental health capacity, chemical and substance dependence. So the idea of just adding a point because somebody's on a boat doesn't necessarily measure their vulnerability. They may be extremely vulnerable, but it will be captured in one of those other measurements. But we don't add a point because somebody is sleeping outside or is living in an encampment. That is not how you get a point for this. It's more a series of questions than calculated. And for us, even then, just because you score the highest point doesn't mean you get the highest amount of points so that you get the resource. It's more like matching the needs of that person. We've measured that their vulnerability, but what is the appropriate intervention? So if somebody can't take care of themselves on a daily basis and do their activities of daily living, although they score the highest score, we're not going to put them in a house where they can't be self-sufficient. So I think that for us is the sticky point on what's being proposed. It's just like a lot of people we serve are extremely vulnerable. We have people who get referred to us through the hospitals, and they come in for recovery from health issues related to not having living in a place that's not necessarily meant for habitation or not fit for habitation. We will get them, help them, nurture them to a place of health, and encourage them to enter the shelter and housing system and try and prioritize them for housing. And many of those folks who are anchor outs return to their boats because they don't want a house. They consider that to be their house. So just adding a point for them being on an anchor out doesn't really help serve the most vulnerable homeless people if they just want to go back to the boat. So I think that's the situation that we see. What I see is the gap, personally, is that there isn't enough outreach and people who are vulnerable on the boats and disconnected from the system taking this survey. So I think we need better outreach onto those anchor outs to take the VI Spadat. But people also have to be willing and want to move into housing. We can't just tell them you scored high as you need to get this housing and they don't want to leave their boat, right? So,
true, people living on the street as well.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And there's arguments of vulnerability. Is it more dangerous to be psychotic and under the influence and on a boat or wandering through traffic on 4th Street or in an encampment with lots of people living in close conditions and tuberculosis or something? There's a number of different ways you could measure what is the most vulnerable. I think there's many people who need assistance. Yeah.
Thank you. So now it's time for public comment.
You bet.
Would anyone like to address the board on this item?
Yes, Doug Storm, 700 Waldo Point. I've been, as most know, I've been keeping track of the demographic survey, a statistical database that really tracks the people that are out there. Based upon tracking it, I started in earnest in 2014, really tracking who's out there, the vessels, all that. And I've been doing it for, since 2014. And my calculations, best guess, is that approximately one-third of the people out there are elderly, meaning they're 65 or older. They have physical impairment. They have a serious challenge. They are extremely at risk. And as mentioned earlier, just because you live on a boat doesn't mean you're at risk. But just like I remember my parents, they didn't want to move off from the lake house. They didn't want to move into independent living because that meant a change in life.
So you get a person out there that's been independent all their life, and as soon as they get rid of their boat, now they don't have something to take care of. And so we have people out there, friends that I've known for 30 years. You know, one guy's walking around with a colostomy bag. He's got chemical problems. And I've talked to his family, and they're concerned about him. But it's a real sociological issue. And once again, it gets back to a team effort of working with the resources in the community. But there is a real need for providing public access or public housing for those especially at risk, high risk. And you got a third of the population, between a quarter and a third of the population, that are really at risk. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Well, the social worker in me has to speak up here. I think that you made a good case for them staying involved. And if there is the outreach that's needed, there's been no information about how that can happen. I'm not sure how it can happen. I mean, do you do that? Is there somebody at the county, the social service department, the new Lucy's Law folks? Obviously, there are a lot of people out here that need some help and would be far better off than living on the water. So I hope that you can be a catalyst in this, and certainly the Board of Supervisors could be too. And so I urge you to take some action. Thank you.
Yeah, Garvey, I'm sorry, I just can't let that stand. I was so rude. Just, there are as many people on land who need services as people on the water, and there's so many out there who are so proud and so seaworthy and great people, so I just want to make sure that was out there.
Would anyone else like to make a public comment? If not.
I'd be happy to start, and I want to start by acknowledging Homeward Bound and congratulating you yet again for the award that you got today at the Heart of Marin Luncheon. Very well deserved. You do fantastic work, and thank you so much. And this consortium does great work. And you know, this is a difficult situation. I think all of us, regardless of what kind of work we do, want to be data based, and we want to figure out how to be objective and well-informed in the decisions we're making. And so I appreciate what you both said about the tool and the importance of trying to figure out in a very fair and balanced way who's the most vulnerable. And so the limited amount of housing that is available, and there's not nearly enough of it as we all know, can be allocated on a priority basis to people who need it most, and so that we can also assess the kind of services that people need, even if it doesn't happen to be housing out of where they are. The difficulty that I have, frankly, is that it's hard to live on the street. There's obvious challenges created by living outdoors. But imagine if you are a disabled person over 65 trying to get on and off your boat in weather conditions that are not ideal. And so I continue to believe that there is an aspect of living on a boat that exacerbates vulnerabilities for people who may score in various ways and whose situation is very accurately assessed by the tool as you know it. It's a challenge, you know, certainly at the county and various departments. We want to use tools that have been well-tested, that are used in other places so that the data we collect can be accurately compared to data that's collected elsewhere around the country. So I'm very sympathetic to the challenge here, and I think we're all trying to do the right thing and make sure that we help the people who need help. And the outreach is crucial, and you've come to the Board of Supervisors, at that point I said, what about the outreach to people on the water? There's tremendous work being done, has been done for a number of years, for our homeless population who are on land, recognizing that like people who are on their boat, not everybody on land wants to come in either. And so the goal is to provide the services that can most help people. But having said all that, I still believe that being on the water, for folks who may not have the mariner skills that we would want them to have in weather conditions that are particularly fraught, creates an additional element of vulnerability and risk. And so if there is a way to create an overlay, I'm not sure what the solution is, but I think you hear the message. So I would be in favor of sending this letter for all of those reasons.
Well, you know, I understand the trigger here, whether you're sleeping under the RVB in a tent by the shoreline at a high tide or out in a boat, because I think if we reached out to those one-third occupants in the boat who are maybe in that category that we think and mm-hmm. say, hey, we have mm-hmm. services available mm-hmm. for you if you want to move on the shore, you know, potentially. And maybe then get interviewed and go through that checklist. Because, as you know, like San Francisco, we can't force someone to leave a boat.
Actually not.
So now I'm thinking about, okay, so we go down this path here, and we do a mooring feel, and now we are the landlords. But can we control who we rent to? Are they, you know, can they actually survive out in the boats? I mean, there are ways here in the future that, you know, the criteria, I don't know whether that's true or not. I mean, I support sending a letter to the HAS. I've worked with them with my family and stuff. We've had, you know, home care and everything else. It's a great organization, but my background dealing with the homeless situation is a tough one. Mm-hmm. And you got to persuade them to come off the boat, to come on the land and, you know, and find some housing if we have it available, which we all know is not really abundant around here in Marin County, nor San Francisco or anywhere else in the East Bay, Oakland area. So whatever we can do, when I read this letter from Adam, the city manager, about the death we had a few weeks ago, you know, that's heartbreaking. You don't want to see that. I knew a homeless person in Mill Valley who, for 20 mm-hmm. years, lived on. We helped him out as we can, and finally he passed away. You know, by the bay where he drowned to death because he was involved with drugs and other things. So that's my two bits on that right now. I support the letter, but I don't know if it's going to help. I think a lot of the law enforcement agencies, the sheriff's department, Sausalito, you know, reaching out, Mariner Calvin. You identify individuals. You got to start working. You know, maybe it's time you give it your boat and move to shore.
Could be a stack of cards.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an mm-hmm. outreach to say, hey, mm-hmm. That's just mm-hmm. neighbor helping neighbors really in this area, because the government is hard to force people to leave their house to do something else.
Well, the goal here isn't to force anybody to.
No, absolutely, it's not.
No, this is affirmative. This would be for people that want to leave the water.
Correct.
Because they are in fear. So on that note, I need a motion to authorize me to prepare to get together with staff and prepare a letter.
I'll make that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. So let's see. Item 6, 2019 work plan. Staff report?
Yes. It's that time of year to lay out your New Year's resolutions for what you will accomplish in the year 2019. First, though, I think it's time to celebrate the accomplishments you did achieve in 2018, and I've listed them here in the staff report, and we referred to it earlier with the culmination of proceeding with the mooring feasibility study, but you accomplished a bunch of other things that I've listed in the staff report. So now it's time to take a look at what will be accomplished in 2019. And a real key centering point to the work plan that's proposed for this coming year is the mooring feasibility and planning study. It really will provide the analysis and information to the board from which other decisions can be made later on in the year. So as you look at the draft work plan that is laid out in the agenda packet, you'll know that it does center around what decisions will be made relative to moorings as you gain the information from the study. So a lot of the work plan seems to be heavily loaded in the second half of the year because that's when you'll have the information. But for the first half of the year, there's other things that you could go ahead and start tackling. One of which is, do you want to start having the policy discussion around, so say you did have authorized moorings or permitted moorings of some sort in Richardson Bay that was under RBRA's jurisdiction and direction. Who would be on those moorings? What are the vessels? What are the situations upon which those moorings would be allowed to be permitted? So you could start to engage in those policy discussions that are not related necessarily to location or ground tackle or overall capacity or the transiting to the shore. And so that is listed as an option for you to undertake in the first half of the year. One point of clarification that I want to make is I did learn that it may be a little bit unclear here is that in the second half of the year, those are not necessarily in chronological order about when you would be undertaking them. I've just lumped them all together in the second half of the year. But during the course of the year, staff would be working on doing research and analysis on various aspects that would lead up to the decisions that are listed in the second half of the year about the management. There was some reference early about how was it going to be governed and managed. We can certainly start doing some of the groundwork on that, as well as looking at the finance aspects of what all is involved in establishing moorings. And again, the decision process later in the year is around, you know, how would that be, would those be individually owned? Would they be owned by RBRA if there were moorings? So we can start working on some of that initial discussion. How would things be financed? What are some of the financial sustainability issues around that? So this is really about what the board would be undertaking during the course of the year. But meanwhile, staff would be working behind the scenes to gather this information for you to ultimately make these decisions. So the direction I'm looking for this evening from the board is there anything missing from the list? Is there anything here that you have some concerns about the timing of undertaking them in this year or when in the year, and also whether you want to begin any of the other the policy discussions in the first half of the year?
I would just add, putting on ongoing money. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'd add to that, I think it would be good. Many of these policy issues we've been talking about with public input over the last, you know, the course of the last year, and I think we should continue those conversations while the feasibility study is in process. Obviously, that information is going to be crucial. And I say that in large part because I think, to me, the vessel safety issues are really key, and I want to make sure that we're continuing to have the conversations that are appropriate and assist the community in working on making sure that as many boats that are on the water are eligible for the Burgee system as possible. Because I think, to me, regardless of what happens with moorings going forward or permitting going forward, that's something that needs to happen for the safety of people both on the water and off the water, to make sure that our vessels are brought up to the best condition they can be in. So that wasn't really mentioned in here, and I want to make sure that that's an ongoing aspect of what we're talking about.
And may I address that point right now? One item I realized I overlooked is, you had been working on a draft ordinance for establishing operability and the seaworthiness and so forth, and that went into a black hole called the State Boating and Waterways Review Process. So it still has yet to emerge from their review, which is required by law for them to review it before we can adopt it. And so one of the points I made in the report is, I wonder at this point, should we just put a pause on the ordinance, on the board adopting an ordinance at this point and await what your overall approach will be on the requirements for any mooring. So in other words, do you want to go, if we do get the go-ahead from Boatings and Waterways, do you want to go ahead and adopt the ordinance now that establishes seaworthy and operability requirements, or do you want to just go ahead and wait till you have a whole kind of more holistic approach to what that means for the mooring program?
My question about that is, so State Boating and Waterways needs to weigh in before we can actually take action on
before you can adopt the ordinance. You've already looked at the
ordinance. Adopt the ordinance, and then if the state agency said, yeah, we'd like some fine-tuning, it would be good to you if you revised X, Y, or Z, we could go back and make those revisions.
You could amend the ordinance at that point, sure.
Because do we have I'm assuming, given it's a state agency, we have no sense of when we might actually hear anything from them.
We sent it to them in early October, and at Christmas time, they said they were still reviewing it. So we'll keep checking back.
Maybe we should ping them in the new year and ask them how they're doing.
Yeah. If the board is interested in moving forward with that ordinance, I can certainly keep pursuing that. The question is whether you want to continue to pursue it or whether you want to just wait on the whole thing.
I mean, our guidelines are pretty basic. They refer to seaworthiness, having holding tanks for sewage, et cetera. And those are just so basic. I mean, they're basically Coast Guard requirements. So I think we could...
I agree with that, and I also think we had a good collaboration with individuals on the Anchorage in crafting a lot of that language, and I'd hate to see it languish because I do think that's a step forward that's helpful.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so.
We might have some public
comment. Let's go for the public comment. Is there any public comment?
All right, folks, real quick, Alden Bevington, just regarding the Burgee plan or the Burgee system. It would be really helpful to get a timeline. I think that the best approach for getting the Burgees done is maybe kind of possibly a threat of ordinance so that we can get people to take it seriously, because I think the community doesn't respond well to legal threat or so if we've been trying to operate on the educe because we don't have the compel side of the equation. That process has not gone as swiftly as we'd liked. It's actually a tricky thing to do in this winter time, but anything that we can do that you all can assist us, and you can think about this, but to help move that forward, because it's actually a fantastic project. We do have 50 people that would probably pass, but we haven't been able to muster the team with everything else going on to just actually do that, do those checks or fulfill the checks. It's an immediate term fix. And it's not about law. It's about, keeping people safe and keeping boats safe and keeping property owners in Tiburon safe. And I really love it as a civil society initiative. So, anything that y'all think of that you can do to help us, in that, we don't have a lot of money to fill in the gaps for people that don't have certain things that would make them, in compliance. This community, I can tell you, is amazing. They will do anything to help each other. I mean, it's actually the strongest community I've lived in, and they will show up at 3 o'clock in the morning, five people, and save your boat from sinking. It's astounding. But we don't have a ton of resources. So if there are resources that we can access from somewhere that you all know that can assist us to help the community get into compliance, rather than somebody who's poor pulling out of their small pile to help them, this other person plug a hole because they've got two apples and this person has half an apple, it would be really great. We need some inflows, and we're doing the same work. So thank you.
Douglas Storms, 700 Waldo Point. I feel like a historian. So I'm going to take you back when
the RVRA came into existence.
Oops.
The Richardson Bay Community Association was established.
Can you press the button?
Yeah, button. Well, maybe...
You have to hold it on.
Maybe just got to get that phone, too. Now it's on.
Oh, it's the battery.
Maybe I touched it. So, if I talk real loud, I think you can hear me. So the RVRA was existing, and we worked with the Richardson Bay Community Association, entered into a memorandum of agreement with the County of Marin and the RVRA. And part of that agreement, before Bill Price came on board, there was a harbor administrator, Andy Anderson, and I remember that he would take people to West Marine to buy ground when West Marine was at Harbor Drive, would take them to buy ground tackle, and there were about 22, 23 people that took advantage of that program. So now to follow up on what Alden was saying, 100, let's just say 100 level boards. You have 50 that they can get into compliance and they take care of business by themselves. They have resources. There's another 50 that will need assistance. We can provide some assistance, and we are triaging and funneling, shifting resources to make sure that they don't sink or drag, et cetera, et cetera. But I estimate with 1,000, those 50 boats, if there's $1,000, that would go toward bringing them up to meet the richest men anchoring and safety guidelines. So it's a choice. Do you spend $50,000 now, or do you spend $250,000 to bring them off the beaches, to recover them off the bay? So, you know, I've mentioned this in the past, but it's something that should be, it's not all or nothing. It's the Mariners, it's the county, RVRA, the nonprofits, the churches. There's a church, the Presbyterian Church, Chad, right, it was the Presbyterian Church, that they donated $500 or over $500.
The Episcopal Church,
they donated over $500 for the Virgins, you know. So it's working together again as a team. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll have to speak loud too, I guess. The county and...
Can you say your name? Oh,
I would like to... bring up the fact that the county and most jurisdictions I know of have a process, procedure for approving ordinances. There has to be two readings, that sort of thing. That would give, I mean, personally, I haven't looked at this in a while, and maybe you have, but I think that would at least give us more time to be able to comment reasonably. I basically think it would be good to wait until we hear what they say, but if you don't want to do that, at least we'll have a couple of months.
You bet.
Anyone else?
Are you two tied together?
Yeah.
Really?
Hi, I'm still Rebecca Schwartz-Lesberg, Audubon, California. With the work plan, just some stuff that came to me when sitting here and hearing these conversations tonight. In addition to some early policy conversations that can happen even before the feasibility study comes out, that additional outreach, not only to BCDC, but also to California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and even those boating and waterways. I think that some of that can certainly happen while the feasibility study is underway. I think the part of it that sticks with me is that eventually we will have to have Quentin speaking into the empty tank. eventually we will have to have a conversation of whether whatever is come up with is consistent with state law or not. And if it's not, what are the options? Like, what is that path forward? And so to start some of those conversations of what are the options there if, you know, we need to figure out a change in state law, you know, whatever that is. I think those conversations, the earlier the better. And then also the part that I didn't feel like was in there was how we're engaging with Sausalito on this feasibility study or its results, since that's where, you know, and those in the recent news statement here, but that's where the people come to shore. So I think that having it clear how we're doing that, I think, would be helpful in knowing, like, are there milestones in the feasibility study or after the feasibility study where that coordination is going to be particularly valuable, and making that clear and transparent, I think, would be helpful for all. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Yeah, sorry. On that last point, Beth, we did agree to pay for a study that covered parts of RVRA parts of the bay that are in Sausalito waters. So that I wanted to remind everybody of that. You may remember it. This study is comprehensive of Sausalito waters as well as county waters. So that doesn't exactly get to how will we be talking to Sausalito going forward, but we do talk to Sausalito a lot.
We meet with Sausalito every month.
Yeah.
And their waterfront committee.
Yeah.
So there is a congruence between the RBRA and the Sausalito.
And that's what I think these additional suggestions of what we could be doing in terms of outreach and policy conversation while the feasibility study is in process were good suggestions.
So I think
this is a guidance kind of.
This is just to adopt the work plan. And do we want to reserve the second Thursday for board meetings?
Oh, an additional. I hadn't even gotten that part. Where's that?
Item six.
On the agenda.
Yeah.
We're moving on.
It's the work plan. It's the work plan.
Oh, adopt yeah.
On our work plan here, just make sure we ongoing collaboration, communication with our stakeholders. I think this comment right now, this point with Barbara, Rebecca, DCDC, the Mariners, Sausalito, it's really important that, sort of talk about what we're trying to do here to get everyone bought into it. If it's wildlife fishing game, the guy down the street, someone, but I think transparency on the website, this is the time we want to make sure everyone doesn't get shocked, in July that, okay, what are you guys doing?
Right.
So,
yeah.
I think this should be an ongoing objective.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, we would continue to keep this as a team effort. So,
And then the question about reserving the second Thursdays for board meetings. Okay. Isn't that what we're already doing?
Yes, but I thought every year just...
Oh, we need to refresh our commitment.
I want to make sure you get the new calendars.
Okay, no problem.
No problem.
Okay.
We have a motion to adopt the working plan as with amendments.
Okay. So, motion, second?
Make a motion to adopt the working plan as amended.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Item seven, Harbor Administrator's Report.
It's been a fairly busy winter. I'm sure you've seen the rain, felt the rain, lived in the rain. Boats have been moving around quite a bit. We've had a lot of rapid response on the west shore side. So far, no major damage. We did have one of the fellows who had one of his boats get loose, actually cover the homeowner's deductible for the damage that it was on his dock, but it was enough so that he had to file with his insurance, and that was covered by the boat owner, which was great. The boat's no longer in the bay either, so that was a bad day out there, bad night, actually. Of course, most of these storms end up at about 3 in the morning at their peak. So it's very, very expensive to mount any kind of a rescue attempt. And I say attempt because there are a number of times where it's just too dangerous for anything to happen until dawn. Because you've got people who have to get into the water to run a line in a wetsuit all the way to the boat and then haul it out again. So we don't recommend that that happens at night. It's just property damage in the end rather than losing a life. But I put the numbers down on what all has been happening. But one of the things that happened was that we got a lot of money last year from Boating and Waterways for boat disposal. And as a result of my broken leg and not being able to get out of bed to go take care of business, I haven't been able to spend most of it. No, not most of it. I should say a lot of it. Not even that. It's dwindling quickly as I speak, but I was able to get the contract amended so that we're able to extend those funds out to October. So at the writing of this report, I was saying something like we were going to apply. We've already applied and gotten that extension. Water testing's back just like usual. We'll start up in November or February again. Did the boat census. The numbers came out differently from the Mariner's numbers, but I was on that boat census, and I'm pretty confident of those numbers. So, but there were a number of boats that were out there as cruising boats and disappeared as soon as October was over, heading to Mexico. And then we did gain a number of boats from Sausalito waters. So, you know, it definitely skews the report a little bit between those. And we attach that report as well. And then financials are on there as well. Nothing too surprising, although it's hard to get revenues entered on a timely basis sometimes through the county's system. They're overwhelmed a little bit, and they're trying to get things done, and we tend to drop off the end of the earth because we're a JPA and not part of the county as a whole. So I tend to have to go in and beg them to enter numbers sometimes, but we managed to get that done, so I'm pretty confident of the numbers there now. Any questions?
Thank you. Thank you for your report.
Did the RVRA have a boat in the holiday Christmas boat parade that Sausalito had?
No. No, you know, I did not have a boat. We were busy in the yard that day, though. And actually, I got home and realized I missed the parade. So.
So.
Fireworks.
What an oversight!
Yeah.
We're gonna have to put that in our work
plan.
Yeah.
We'll put it on the wish list.
We'll have our own float. So, would anyone like to make a public comment on the harbor administrator's report? You don't really have to do that.
You know what? That's part of the evaluation process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I could ask, Bill, when did you take the census?
Oh, let's see. It was October 17th and 18th.
October?
17th and 18th, yeah.
So it's not really off. I mean, my data is based upon in the last 2 weeks.
The numbers are so changeable that...
Right, no, and that's part of what I want to say is that it's the trend that you're looking at. So what was the total number you have in October? How many were there?
Oh, I don't know. Where is it? It was 194 vessels.
That
sorry.
That was in the county waters, so only, right?
Yeah.
County or Sausalito?
County waters.
Okay. So it's, yeah, that's the definition, county, city, and city.
Well, no, it's not hard to figure out the two. I mean, there's the county and then there's the city.
Right.
So, but, yeah.
It's always changing out there. Summer, winter, it changes.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else? All right, thank you very much for your report. Item 8, which is open time for public expression. So if there's anyone in the public that would like to add to our conversation, this is the appropriate time.
You can use the mic.
Man, I'm like on fire by
then. Can you spell your first name and laugh?
Rebecca Schwartz, Lesberg, Audubon, California. Off what we've been talking about, update on the waterbird sanctuary. The birds are here. The other day, yesterday, we had estimated over 20,000 birds were in the Audubon sanctuary. A lot of buffaloheads, a lot of scop, runny ducks. It's really cool. This is my first winter here, so to actually see the sanctuary in full birdiness. Yeah, full plumage, which is really exciting. We also have our Waterbird Festival coming up on February 2nd. It's at the Richardson Bay Audubon Center. I think it starts around 9 or 10. There's events all day. There's bird walks. There's bird drawing classes. Around noon, there's a food truck. There's a bluegrass band. There's a beer truck. I did go to this last year. It's really fun. I encourage everybody to attend.
What was the date again?
February 2nd.
Cool.
It goes from about 10 to 3-ish. I think that we're going to have some live animal demonstrations. So I imagine it's owls and hawks.
And you have a big bucket for eelgrass donations for you guys.
Yes, you
right.
Nice.
February 2nd, come to Richardson Bay Audubon, and our website should have all the address.
Great.
Actually, I am inspired. Unfortunately, our news is not as good. We had our Christmas bird count, let's see, the week, the Saturday after Christmas, and the counts were all low. But, you know, it kind of depends on where the birds, and especially these big birds, they tend to congregate together.
Well, they're all over there in the alkali.
But, you know, we have large restorations in the Bay, in the North Bay, so they're probably all up at Hamilton. But they sure want to visit the Bay then.
So, okay.
It's just kind of, you know, so that we keep the holidays here going on all year, just for folks here to remember how tough it is to live out on the water during this season. And, you know, a lot of people choose to do that because they kind of like the record and their ruggedness, and a lot of people don't show up to these meetings. It's a little difficult. But just to shout out, I know some people are, you know, it's a struggle. So just to keep everyone in our prayers. I don't know, that's it. It's tough. Like, try and not go inside for a week during the season. It's summer.
Thank you. Any staff comments?
Yeah, I just have a couple items I wanted to point out. I wanted to address the issue about the moorings that came up around the moorings that, the arbitrary moorings that are in Sausalito waters. When Sausalito withdrew from RBRA, it was recognized by everyone. Oh yeah, RBRA has, moorings in Sausalito waters, and that's one of those things that we're going to have to figure out one of these days. Well, the one of these days has now come about at our last meeting that we had with folks from Sausalito, and we had Adrian from BCDC there. Sausalito brought up the fact, hey, you've got these moorings there that they're in our jurisdiction, and you're, you know, RBRA now needs to kind of deal with that because they really don't belong in our jurisdiction. And upon research, it's, you know, come up that the moorings that RBRA got permission for were really to be used for impounding vessels, and 5 moorings were approved. We had 7. We also, over time, had rented them out so they could be, we could get the money to maintain the moorings and use them on an ongoing basis, opposed to having people informally hook up. So we've been working very, you know, cooperatively with BCDC staff and just trying to figure out what do we do now? Because we obviously want at least a couple of moorings for impounding boat purposes. What do we do about the fact we've got these other ones that folks have been renting? So we recognize it's an issue, and BCDC has been very cooperative and collaborative in terms of trying to work with us. And how do we figure our way through this? So I just wanted to kind of clear the air on about the moorings and how it came to pass. And speaking of BCDC, I want to let folks know that we have been invited to attend their enforcement committee meeting in February to update some of the folks there on the subcommittee of the board, if you will, update them on our activities and our mooring study and such. It's February 21st. Yeah. And so we'll be attending that. That's all I have.
Thank you. Are there any other board member matters?
No.
If not.
Public comment?
You're kidding.
God.
Barbara had an opponent, and so I have to. This is more directed toward the public and with you, with the RBRA, but specifically with Sausalito in reference to the moorings. Those moorings were there for emergency use to secure boats that were dragging. Sausalito, they're winning the battle, but they're going to lose the war because when they put power boat coming in from the north, when you have 50 knot winds, you have to have a mooring, something to secure these two. That is the last line of defense, having moorings there. And so by taking it out, you're cutting yourself off at the knee, and a big boat does thousands of dollars. You talk about Belvedere, it's going to take out thousands, it will cost thousands of dollars of damage to vessels in these harbors, depending on where it lands up. So it's, you know, work with us. Think twice about removing the moorings.
And don't get transit down that out, too.
Yeah.
It's a ferry.
Okay. So, time to adjourn.
Yep, time to adjourn.
Good night, everybody.